It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, he's not lying. We are living that dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. You can call us anytime you'd like if you want to join our conversation today at 802-655-6672. That's 802-655-6672. Or text us on the Town Fair Tire text line to the same number. I'll say it one more time, 802-655-6672. Austin Danforth, good morning, my friend.
Yo.
Looking sharp.
I
sharp as a tack this
don't
morning.
Don't tell anyone I wore these same clothes like 3 days ago.
Well, they look good. They're neatly pressed.
Thank you.
Looking sharp. I mean, come on, man.
Different hats, so it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
If I told you I didn't fold them, what would you say?
I would say then you're doing something right because they're looking good.
Wow, that is unexpected credit for my pile system.
Because, well, look at it. I mean, when I don't fold something, it's in a ball somewhere, and I put it on, it's wrinkly, and my wife's screaming at me. And that looks like, you know, that just came out of the dry cleaners.
I gently set it down on top of all the other clothes and then put it back on today.
Aaron Wells, welcome back, my man. I know you had a little oral surgery about a week ago, and Brady filled in for you last
he
week.
He translated well.
Yeah, he did a good job. We actually heard the phone call. I'm more impressed with the fact that you take your job, that you take this so seriously, you love the station so much that the first person you're calling is Brady, when you even couldn't speak good English at the time. I was impressed with that young man.
Yeah, at first I wanted to see if I could manage to be here on Saturday, and then when I got out of surgery, I was like, there's no way it's happening. So I decided I should let Brady know so that you guys are well taken care of. He has time to prep and everything.
Yeah,
I think it seemed like it went well.
It was just fine. You left everything perfectly for him, and the show went great. And obviously, I'm glad to have you back, and you're in great voice today, so you're back at it, and we're glad to have you back here.
And it was great content.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Like you knew you had content on your hands or in your mouth there when you made that call.
I think it took me longer than most of the listeners that heard it to figure out what I said.
Yeah, no, did you even know what you were saying? That's the real question.
I don't remember it very well, and when I listened back to it, I was like, I think I could make out the one part where I said, you guys probably can't hear me very well, which is like the most part that's easiest to hear.
Right. Understood. Yeah. Well, you did a great job and we're glad you're back. Hey, what a show we have. It's been kind of a busy day, a busy week in sports. But before we get to anything, I have to say congratulations to you, Austin Danforth.
Oh,
the NSMA Sports Media Sports Writer of the Year Award for Vermont. I mean, Austin, congratulations, my friend. That's an unbelievable honor.
Thanks, buddy. It's always fun to win stuff, right?
Well, it's fun to win stuff, but I think more importantly, I mean, it's recognized by your peers, right? I don't know how this stuff works, but and not only that, I mean, you're now invited to go to this national thing where you're going to be honored with all, and we're not just talking about local people, this is national people that are going to be there. I mean, this is a big honor. I mean, this is a big deal for you.
Yeah, it could be me and Dan Patrick cheersing late into the night Winston-Salem, North Carolina come June. Who knows?
Yeah, listen, I say it all the time. I mean, and if you don't understand, I mean, really, it's just you and Alex doing the sports here for people at the Burlington Free Press. I mean,
yes,
that's essentially what it is.
That's the roster.
And what people have to understand is that when you live in a community like Burlington, this area, Chittenden County, I mean, how many big schools are here? I mean, you're covering 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 schools at some capacities. And then when you're talking about teams that are having some success maybe an hour or two or 3 hours down the road, I mean, you guys are stretched all over the place. And the fact that you guys do the job that you do, I've said this before, when Bernie was my partner and we'd have you guys on, I would always try to trick you with a question. And I've always said, if you had a question about, say, a JV field hockey player that played at Oxbow High School, Austin would know it. I mean, he can tell you. You can't stump you guys. You've earned this. You both are spectacular. And I can't imagine. I'm sure Alex will win this award sometime down the road, too.
I'm just trying to keep up with him. He's got two.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's amazing stuff. You guys do a really good job.
Well, I always appreciate it, even if I blush more than a little bit when you say nice stuff like that. But yeah, I'd like to think if there was something worth knowing about a JV field hockey player at Oxbow, then yeah. I would be you maybe the guy that would know it. Yeah.
You know it. I mean, listen, when we have you on, we used to have you on specifically for different things, and obviously you would be prepared to talk about them, but you know as much about, say, if Mount Anthony Union High School is having a great football season, you know exactly as much about them as you do if Essex is having a great football team that's right around the corner here. So props to you. Congratulations.
Thank
We're
you.
Blessed to have in the community, and obviously I'm proud to work with you every Saturday. So listen, we got some award winners in this room. You know what I mean? Finally some class on this show. You know what I mean? All right, before we get into all the craziness that is this week in sports, I do want to break down some of the local things that are happening.
Wait, this was a crazy week?
Well, I mean, it was. I mean, I don't know if you heard or not, but you know, we now have gluten-free crust at Ramonto's. I mean, that was the biggest news of the
whoa,
week.
Whoa, yeah. We have the breaking news horn?
That was the biggest news for me, and then everything else to me was secondary. You know, we now got the cauliflower crust over there, so for you gluten-freeers, you know, we can help you out. You know, that was the big news for me all week.
I wasn't thinking of that.
Is that a shameless plug? Is that kind of too much
no,
of a shameless
no, no, no,
plug?
No, that's news is news.
That was actually a fantastic bit is what that was. Yeah. That was great.
But with all seriousness, with the sadness to me that this is this story, the cheating scandal that we're going to get into today, you know, we saw what Odell Beckham Jr. did this week on Monday night at the national championship game. You know, it's not a great time in big time sports, but one of the things that you can always rest on is the purity of high school sports. And right now we've got some really good things happening in the state. We've got some phenomenal basketball being played, some great hockey, some crazy things happening. Austin, get us up to date on what's going on with everybody.
Well, so what? Pick your sport. Where you want to start?
We'll start with boys basketball.
So probably the game of the week in boys hoops was last Monday night. Champlain Valley, St. Jay, my top two teams in the power rankings going into this week. It ended up 61-58 CVU because Ethan Harvey finished with 27 points. The last three of them came basically at the buzzer on a three-pointer to break a tie and win it for the Redhawks. Redhawks are now 9-1 after last night, but wild thing about that game against St. Jay, which I thought was going to be a good game. I put it down one of my games to watch.
Yeah.
They were up by 18 in the second half and gave that all away. Like, they built an 18-point lead and then gave it all away in the span of, like, you know, basically a quarter of game time, which tells you a lot about how good they are and a lot about how good St. Jay is. So you look at that right there, 1-2, they're right there. Got coming up, you have Rice, also another one-loss club. They host South Burlington this coming Monday night. That's probably one of the games of the night on Monday, if not for the week.
Yeah.
Rice, it was a weird week, honestly, because this was like the midterm exam time.
Exactly.
So like people everybody's
playing.
A little less active. But boys hoops, you know, you're looking at the top of Division I, you're looking at CVU, Rice, St. Jay, South Burlington. And then there's like four or five teams after that that, you know, have a high enough ceiling and a low and a high enough floor that they can compete with those teams every night. And it's something we see a lot.
So I asked you last time we talked about this was before Christmas. And mm-hmm. I asked you that. I'm like, what do you see? I thought last year going into this, and we talked about this last season, was that there was a lot of parity that we thought there was 4, 5, 6, 7 teams that could win a state championship last year.
Yeah.
And you weren't sure at that point. Like, where are we now? Is this a top heavy division, or do we have 4, 5, or 6 teams that, you know, it's kind of up in the air right now?
I want to say this year it's probably... It's a tough question to answer. I think there's like a big four right now, and maybe it's actually only a big three with CVU, St. Jay, and Rice.
Right.
But I do think, you know, outside of that, there are teams that can push those top three or four. Last year, I thought it was genuinely probably a toss-up for about 6 teams. So it may be... There's depth of competition.
Who can throw the wrench in this year? Who's the team that, you know, could come out of nowhere here and be a real problem for some of the big four that you're talking about?
You're looking, Rutland's won 4 in a row. They get a good test today. They go to St. Jay. They win there. Then I think they sort of stamp some credentials at that point. If they don't, they're still in that middle pack. Mount Mansfield, they look great for 3 quarters against Rice a week ago. That was the game Michelle Diashimiye went for 40. If he doesn't go for 40, if he's not on Rice, they're not winning that game.
Yeah.
And we'd be talking about a Mount Mansfield team that's 4-3 instead of 3-4 after graduating a bunch of talent from last year's team. So, like, they're always a tough out. They could throw a wrench in it. South Burlington, 7-3. They have the pieces to be a top 2 or 3 team, but they have not showed that in every game, which is why they're 7-3.
Right.
So I think, you know, you're looking at those teams, Brattleboro 6-4, but they've got some, for every decent win they have, they got a bad loss. So you're trying to figure it out like that. That's Division One. Division Two, the story right now, you have U32, they're unbeaten 8-0. Fairhaven, unbeaten 11-0. Get this, both Fairhaven basketball teams combined, I think, are 21-0. The boys and the girls undefeated, both leading Division Two. Shades of what we're seeing at CVU right now, where the boys are 9-1, top of Division One. The girls are, I want to say, is it 8-0 now after last night? They logged another big win. But the big story for CVU girls, looking at this week, Alex Abrami thought Thursday night's matchup with Essex might be the best game CVU could see for a while. It wasn't. Yeah. It was a 50-point blowout against arguably the second best team in Division One. So
is there a team that can compete with CVU on the girls' side Division One?
Maybe Essex can in another chance.
What makes this team so special?
It's a relentlessness.
I mean, what makes these teams, and they've been the powerhouse, and we know that St. Johnsbury had their moment. It was last year they had their moment here. But
last couple years.
But now, I mean, what has made CVU dominant like this? I mean, because look, I mean, there are some powerhouse girls basketball teams around the state, very competitive ones. We know what Rice has been over the years, especially back in the day. What's made CVU the dominant force?
I think you look at it like with girls soccer, where 1-10... And it's basically the same, but soccer, you know how that goes.
Yeah.
But 1-10, CVU girls basketball is probably much stronger than every other team in the state. And when there isn't that much drop off from 1-10, and you can just play all out because you have two shifts of players that you could throw in pretty interchangeably and feel good about it, that when other teams have maybe one or two stars and then a lot of role players,
How do you beat them? You got to do something.
You got to get hot.
You got to hold the ball. You got to get top of the key and put the ball under your arm and win the game 2-1.
But then you have to be able to hold the ball in the half court.
That's what I mean. Yeah, but they're relentless defensively,
right? They can throw players,
right?
Half that soccer team plays basketball, so you know they're good defenders.
Yeah.
But to me,
you got to do something out. When I'm looking from the outside, looking in for the CVU basketball, girls basketball, you're looking at a program there's nobody close. At least in the soccer world, there's some teams that are close. There's some things that can happen in the soccer world. They're getting people, they're running through people.
Right.
Some coach has got to have the stones to say, hey, I'm going to do something crazy here.
We're going to win 12-9.
Right. Or we're going to win 2-0. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take, but do something that drastic to beat them. I don't know if you can go man for man against this team and hope that two of your players go off for 30 points.
I think what you're drawing up sounds like the recipe of Patrick Jim, where you definitely can't run with a team that has that many more players than you do. So you do have to keep it probably sub-30.
Yeah.
Hope you get a little hot and take your chances.
Yeah, or pack the paint and make them shoot three. Like, do something crazy. You got to do something insane to beat this team right now.
How good are they from beyond the arc?
They're pretty good. They're guard heavy, so they have three or four kids that can really fill it up. Ah. I mean, we saw that last year's championship against St. Jay. Catherine Gilby was hot early. Yeah, a couple other players knocked him down early. And they just couldn't keep it up against a team like St. Jay that is Josie Schwanier and other players. Neva Bostic last year, who drilled, I think, 6 in the championship game or something like that.
This is mostly a joke, but you could, if you really felt like you had nothing to lose, try the old Trinity offense and just chuck up as many threes as possible, see if you can just keep up with them scoring-wise.
But you're not going to do that. You're not going to win a game doing that.
You'll probably lose.
Because they'll get rebounds, they'll get runouts, and you're gone.
You have to do something drastic, like hold the ball every time you have it.
You have to make the game shorter so that any mistakes are compounded. Yeah. That's the name of the game.
All right, real quick, hockey in the hockey world, what's happening there?
So hockey, you're looking at the top two teams in Division One right now, both won losses, Essex, Rice, also right behind them, Spalding boys won loss as well. Essex lost head-to-head against Rice a couple weeks back. It was 3-1, I believe. I like ultimately, I mean, where Essex is, they have more skaters and more attackers with some experience coming back. They don't necessarily have that standout stud that we've seen them have in the past. But I think the way that the season goes, the way they can, like CVU girls basketball, throw numbers at people, they're going to be the team to beat. They last weekend went up to Collins-Purley in St. Albans, beat the Bob Whites 2-0 in a game that was tight. both goals came on a 5-minute major in the first period, and that was all she wrote.
Yeah.
So the issue for BFA on the other side, they just don't score a lot of goals. So if they get outscored like that at some point, it's going to be a mountain for them to climb to get back into a game like that. But if they're keeping you off the board, they can very easily win 1-0 or 2-1.
And obviously on the girls' side, Colchester Burlington with a huge win over Essex. It's got to be a program-defining win.
I think so at this point. And I think they go right back at it. And I think they have BFA St. Albans tonight or sometime next week.
Yeah,
so
yeah, big weekend for that, I'll tell you. But let's get to the Green City Garage poll question today. Hey, it's important to have your battery and charging system checked this time of year and your engine cooling as well. The cold temperatures can kill a weak battery seemingly out of nowhere. Green City Garage will make your ride ready to push through the cold. Check out Green City Garage, 802-651-9299. They're located at 49B Commerce Avenue, Unit 5. Tell my buddy Chris Wallace we sent you the poll question today, and you can go to Twitter at 1013 The Game on Twitter. The question is, and we're going to talk about this next segment, would you rather face a batter on steroids or a batter that knew what pitch was coming? Yes, which one would you pick? Go to Twitter right now and let us know. When we get back, we're going to jump right into this. The cheating scandal that is the Houston Astros. We'll be right back.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join us today. 802-655-6672, or you can text us in the Town Fair Tire text line in the exact same number. 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. I am Jeff Paul, Austin Danforth, and our boy Aaron Wells with you this morning. So, hey, listen, it's been an insane week in the world of baseball. You know, this time of year, the weather's cold and people are getting excited about spring training. And we heard that this could be coming. There was a cheating scandal going on with the Houston Astros. We've heard all the rumors about the camera in the middle of center field and everything that's gone on with this team and this organization. But listen, Major League Baseball put the hammer down this week. First of all, obviously what happened in Houston, we saw with the manager being fired and the GM being let go. The Red Sox have let Alex Cora go this week. Alex Cora, which is one of the quote unquote ringleaders, what was happening in Houston.
Yeah.
Carlos Beltran finally gets a managerial job. I shouldn't say finally. He's only been out of the league for a couple of years. But the job that I think he really wanted, the New York Mets, he resigns because of this. And there's more to come. I was reading a thing this morning that even La Russa, Tony La Russa, was cheating when he was managing the Chicago White Sox back in the day years ago, which is something we'll get into later. I got to get more information, but I saw something pop up this morning when I was doing some show prep. You know, it's a sad state for the game. I don't know in terms of its cheating, and I know that, and I'll say, I know that people are kind of trying to say, well, you know, if you can't be mad at it, if Yankee fans can't be upset because obviously, you know, with all the steroid things going on, and I'm not saying you're not going to compare cheating, and cheating is cheating.
Yeah.
But I think the problem that I see with this one, and I'm not going to compare somebody taking something to better themselves, to make them a better player, to cheat, because they're both terrible things. But I think with this, it's almost as if the Major League Baseball gave them an opportunity to like stop this. There was a memo that went out that said, hey,
like 2017 and 2018. Like, and then I think last year,
let's
too.
Knock it off. We know what's happening. And the Houston Astros basically said, sorry, kind of went further with it.
Yeah, what we've talked about here in the last couple of weeks as this has developed is the ethics of it is the use of technology and how it's employed. And like the potential revelation this week that some of the Astros players, some of their most clutch players have potential, like allegedly rumored might have it, might not have it.
Mm-hmm.
There might be like electronic devices that they're wearing in some fashion that can be signaled to know when they're getting an off-speed pitch or when they're that's nuts.
And there are two things that will stand out to me. The first thing, I don't know if anyone's talked about it yet. I haven't listened to a lot of sports talk radio this week, but if you watch game 5 of the wild card series that they had with the Tampa Rays, Tyler Glasnow got on the mound in that game, and it was a 2-2 game. If you remember, Houston blew out Tampa twice, and then they went to Tampa, and Tampa got back in the series. It was 2-2. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I've ever seen any pitcher. I'm not talking about if you don't know who Tyler Glasnow, he's the next big thing. He is going to be an absolute stud if he stays healthy. He got lit up like I was pitching to them. I don't know if I've ever seen a professional baseball player square up, hit balls the way he got squared up in that game.
And what's incredible is at the time there were stories coming out that people were like, I think he was tipping pitches. He must have been tipping pitches. And the Astros, there were Astros players like, yeah, we had kind of figured out he was tipping his pitches. And now you look back and you're like, no, it wasn't he was tipping his pitches. And then you knew the pitches.
And then you fast forward to 2 weeks later and you have Jose Altuve, you know, turning around in a straight fastball count. Aroldis Chapman throws you a slider and you're on it like you know it's coming. And then the damning thing to it to me is I don't know if you've seen the video of Altuve coming home in slow motion saying, I have a piece on and grabbing his shirt, like, don't pull my jersey off.
I'm looking at that right now,
And you can see him go down and take his shirt off and then come back up. I mean, look, my point being here is it's just unfathomable the arrogance that this organization and these players have shown. And again, if you look at some of the splits that they've had, what they hit on the road and what they hit at home, It's insane. I'll get some of that information up in a minute. It is crazy the numbers you see, the difference. It's crazy.
Altuve's playoff numbers from last year were 143 on the road and like 352 or something like that at home.
Yeah. When he would come up to bat at home in a playoff game, you're okay, he's going to do something here because he did pretty regularly. And like it was shades of Ortiz back in the day.
Yeah.
But that ultimately wasn't a defining thing for Ortiz. Like, he had plenty of clutch hits, but it wasn't like a disarming irregularity that he was, you know, doing something incredible every time up when he had to. If it's true, like, this is a completely different, like, there are cheating is cheating, but like, this is like a new level of cheating that I didn't even think was possible.
And you know what's funny is, you know, we live in, and what's tough about cheating nowadays for these people is, and I'm going to try to talk, and we can talk about this. I'm not, what I'm saying here is not condoning cheating, because that's not what I'm saying. But we, you know, I used to talk about Alex Rodriguez as an example. People couldn't believe that Alex Rodriguez would take a steroid. Like, why would he do it? Like, he's Alex Rodriguez. He's the best player in baseball. Why do you do it? Why do you need to do it? And I would always say that none of us have ever grown up or ever been in Alex Rodriguez's shoes to understand the different mentalities that the three of us, anyone may be listening right now, have in terms of right or wrong. Alex Rodriguez has been Alex Rodriguez since he was, you know, 18 years old. He was a superstar. And when he starts reading headlines and he doesn't, you know, he knows that he's being paid all this money and you have all this pressure on you. We don't live in a utopia. Nobody's a robot. And you know that baseball is about failure. If you fail 7 times out of 10, you go to the Hall of Fame. Think about that. If every 10 at bats, you're only successful 3 times in your career, every 10 at bats, you're going to the Hall of Fame. So in a sport where it's all about failure, people, and when it's all about money, good people make bad decisions. But this decision that they made is just, I mean, it's not only is it bad, it's arrogant, and it's a bad look for baseball today.
Yeah, I mean, it's very human. There's temptation in all walks of life to do something that's wrong. That's why we have punishments in place for people who give into that temptation, but it's really hard not to sometimes. But like, this is so flying in the face of, like we were talking about in the break, there were memos sent out, there was all this stuff. Like,
systemic.
The MLB knew what was going on and they were going to crack down, and the Astros kept plugging along anyway.
And this is what power can do. This is the to be the best in something as massive as Major League Baseball, or to be the best in the NFL gridiron, or to be the best. I mean, you look at what some of the people that's what I'm saying. Like, this is entertainment for us. Like, we go to sports because we want to be entertained. Like, that's why we turn the TV. Like, for me, you're someone that works all day. In the summer, I look forward to going home and watching my team play on TV, and I want them to be successful because I don't want to watch my team. That's why I don't worry about how much money they spend, as long as I can be entertained, because it's entertainment. But when you start looking at these people as gods that don't make mistakes, and you think of them as, you know, I can't believe he did it. Like, what do you mean you can't believe he did it? These people know, and they're willing to roll the dice on that. And we're not saying it's right. It's not right, but you have to understand it's a completely different world that they live in.
And not only that, you talk about like you going home to go watch baseball in the summer. Now you're going to go home and wonder, is the other team cheating?
Sure.
Is my team cheating? Are all the teams cheating? Like, who is or who isn't cheating. This is, what do you got, Aaron?
It's just like the steroid era. After that, you see a big muscly guy come out and hit a home run. You're like, he's got to be on the juice.
But again, baseball has always been about trying to get an edge, and they play so many games. There was the era of, you and I talked about this months ago. Maybe you don't remember, but we talked about there was the era of greenies, right? I mean, Mike Schmidt came out and said, I wouldn't have been able to get out of bed if it wasn't for amphetamines.
Right.
Then we went to steroids because that was the next big thing. And I said, something else will happen because the steroid thing is so. As much bad press as baseball gets, I got to tell you, I think the decision they made here is going to take care of this problem. I don't think it'll ever happen again. Look at what I'm going to tell you. You're not going to see. I think Cora could be done forever. I mean, I believe maybe 10, 15 years down the road, but he's going to be gone for a long time. Beltran's not going to get another job. You're not going to see the guys in Houston get any jobs. These players are going to be tainted. And you're not seeing guys do steroids anymore. So baseball's come down. Now, we can argue that baseball come down too hard on just a certain amount of people. You know, I mean, I know Brady and I went back and forth a little bit on Twitter until I couldn't go back and forth with him. But he made the point to say Yankee fans shouldn't be upset about this because they were okay with Andy Pettit being in with Gerrit Cole to get Gerrit Cole to sign with the Yankees. And sure, Andy Pettit got a bit of a pass. Because baseball chose who they were going to make their you know, A-Rod was the face of the steroid era.
Right.
The other guys you kind of forgot about. David Ortiz was on that list, but we don't talk about David Ortiz. So you can argue how they did it, but no one's doing it anymore. I think what Manfred did was brilliant with this one. I don't think you have to take away anybody's championships or wins. I think it's the right thing.
Now the question is, do you think he should have taken the bullet of how long it was going to take to fight the players' union and gone ahead and trying to go after the players too? Because everyone knows those guys were in on it. We actually have some Dan Patrick sound here saying he kind of feels like at some point you have to, you know, challenge that players' union.
Okay, we only cheated for a little while. And then you stopped? Did you stop because somebody said stop? Apparently you didn't because your manager lost his job. And now we're going to go, but they wouldn't do buzzers. You don't get the benefit of the doubt here. I don't know if this commissioner gets to the point where it looks embarrassing if he doesn't take on these players in the players' union. That's a powerful union to take on.
But I think you got to give him a chance to do it and see what he does. But I agree. I think he should.
So I got a couple things to unpack here. One, I think, just like if, say, the list of people that are disciplined for this are, you know, management and managers, that's a very small list for a systemic thing. And I don't think it disincentivizes other organizations to not try it, which gets me to my second point, which goes back to you sitting at home watching games and potentially, or anybody listening, and, you know, have that sliver of doubt, or maybe it's a bigger than a sliver, maybe it's a big chunk of pie of doubt in your mind where you're thinking, this seems suspect. All of a sudden, that's going to color, like, even more than steroids. Because steroids, it was kind of like what you saw in Tour de France. You're like, everybody's cheating. Or if you're not cheating, you're close. Or something like, it was so pervasive, and it was the Wild West in baseball, you know, 15 years ago. It wasn't illegal. It was frowned upon, but it wasn't illegal. So you're like, well, everybody probably is. So, okay. But when you're wondering if there are two or three teams out there that are cheating, or maybe they figured it out and they're picking their spots and it's just one night only and it's the night you're watching, how much does that tarnish the experience for fans? I know for myself, after I grew out of like the childhood, you know, idolatry of Michael Jordan in his prime, I slowly lost interest with the NBA. And then that compounded with the moments I would watch, it would be absolutely awful officiating, the idea of the star system, the way in which rules were enforced sparingly, pick your spots. You go back and think about the time that the LA Kings were, or the Sacramento Kings were literally robbed against the Lakers. And you add all that up, and then 2 years later it comes out, oh, the refs are getting the refs are getting paid to like call games differently. By like the whole Donaghy scandal,
right?
That I'm like, cool, I'm done with the NBA now. Like, I don't need to watch you know, people take four steps and have it not be a travel. I don't need to watch James Harden brazenly break rules. It's just, like, it just kept sliding down the hill to an inferior product I don't want to watch.
But because the NBA went down that slippery slope, and I'm with you 100% on what's happened to the NBA, say, in the last 25 years since Michael left. I'm with you on all of that. But my point is, you have to give these. This is the world we live in, though. We live in a world where there's so much money, there's so much fame, and there's so much security if you win and you're successful.
Sample test just.
Okay. Or if you have a, you know, a glass of Snapple or something like that, that's good. But what I'm saying is when you have all that, you're going to have people that are going to push, roll the dice like this. And you've got to give these. And so the thing with the NBA, I agree with you 100%. The NBA hasn't been able to pull that back for a fan like you and I. Yeah. Okay, they haven't pulled that back. Can baseball do that? Baseball did it with the steroids. To me, I think they took care of the steroid issue. Now, how they took care of it can be debated. Because they didn't go after everybody. They made a couple guys as scapegoats and everybody else kind of got a pass. Now, fine. Will they take, now do they need to go after the players? I don't know. But to me, the hammer that was put down this week by Manfred sends a message to organizations. And I got to tell you, maybe they'll roll the dice, but you really got to be you got to be crazy to want to roll the dice to cheat again in Major League Baseball. I feel like they've really done a good job of trying to take care of these problems in a world where it's a lot. It's happening a lot because of the money and the power and the fame. Good people make bad decisions because of that.
I'm looking at it thinking, what in the nature of, you know, the way cheating goes, everybody thinks they can do it a little better.
Right. And they'll be the next thing. Right.
So now it won't whatever it comes out being definitively proven that the Astros have done. So the manager loses his job. But say he made his money, you know, over time. Former player doesn't necessarily need the money. He hits it.
Legacy, Austin. These guys want their legacy, man. At the end of the day, at the momentary situation, at the end of it, Roger Clemens, Alex Rodriguez, they want to be in the Hall of Fame. They want their faces enshrined there, and it probably won't happen.
So if you wanna tarnish that legacy, and according to what's been done, then you're looking at, you got to vacate that championship.
Well, I mean, fine, maybe, but I don't. But to me,
yeah, I know Dan Patrick was talking about that this week.
But I guess, but for me, I'm looking at it in terms of these guys now know that it's over. So why would you, if you really look at it, you're recognizing baseball's making moves here. Like, why would you really wouldn't have to, I don't know. I don't think
there's a redemption tour for those guys?
The biggest thing is, like,
everybody's got a redemption tour.
Not for a while. I mean, they may have a redemption tour, but where do they, you know that there are guys, there are guys, I know we have to go to break. I know you want to have a point to make, and that's fine. But I know we have a guest at 10:40. We have Alex at 10:40, yeah. But we can get back to this. But my point is, at the end of the day, these guys are playing for their legacy, and they're making momentary decisions hoping that it doesn't come back to bite them. So yes, they may have a redemption tour, but their legacy will always be tainted. A-Rod's a good example. Clemens is a perfect example of that. Sammy Sosa is a good example of that. McGuire's a good example of that. That's that era. This era, this is going to be the face of these guys. So yeah, there might be a redemption tour, but the legacy is tarnished forever. And that's what that's what I think baseball's done a good job of going after. And that's why I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of cheating going forward. That's just my guess.
A lot of people felt like upper management and ownership got off kind of easy with all this stuff. So wouldn't the best solution to be to go to the source of the money? Because that's the important thing, like we talked about, is money. And just huge organizational fines for anyone who's get caught doing this so that they will avoid potential cheaters in the hiring process like the plague.
And like if any of these guys can go on a redemption tour and get hired again, what's the real deterrent?
No, honestly,
unless you're going to formally ban people for doing these sort of things or vacate championships or severely fine the people that have enabled them to do it, I'm not sure anything will necessarily change.
Oh, you might be right. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about something a little more calm, I think. High school football and four divisions came up this week. We're talking to the Free Press and Austin's buddy, Alex Abrami, next about that. Don't go anywhere. Good morning. This is Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. 802-655-6672 is the number to join us today. And in studio right now, which is a nice surprise, just came walking in here, the Han to Austin's, you know, Chewy.
Why am I always Chewy?
Or maybe the other way around.
I love Chewy, but why am I always Chewy?
The Ponch to Austin's John. The great Alex Abrami of the Free Press. Good morning, man.
Good morning, Jeff.
Thanks for coming in this morning. This is great.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was just driving by. I figured I'd
stop in. I mean, why not just say you didn't bring any donuts, though? I mean, what's up? You can't just come to somebody's place without bringing something to eat.
I should have, yeah.
I mean, come on, Alex. You're better than that, aren't you?
This is not my finest hour.
Okay, well, we'll let you get by on that. Hey, before I get into the things I want to talk about, how about the Giants' new offensive coordinator? Coach Garrett.
Hey, as long as he's not calling, or I guess he is calling the plays, but as long as he's not making those fourth and one decisions, that's coming from the head coach.
Yeah, I'm all in. I think he was a great coordinator in Dallas. I'm really excited about this coaching staff.
He's not the head coach, so that's good. Right, exactly. I think this is a good hire.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Okay, good. Well, if you feel good, I'm good about it. I don't know who's better. I don't know. Who knows? Based on what I've seen, Ben McAdoo's out there. I mean, they could have brought him back. I saw that Jacksonville's looking at him, but they'd be their OC. Are they out of their minds?
Ben McAdoo is coming back?
Yeah, he's coming back.
Not everyone's a head coach.
Evidently. We've learned that. All right, let's get right into this. You wrote an article this week about high school football. It's something that Austin and I talk about a lot, about the potential, which didn't happen, of a four-division, you know, state. Basically, you have a Division I teams, Division II, Division III, Division IV. I started to read this, and Austin and I debate a lot, or actually I think we agree a lot, that it drives me nuts to see a school as big as Brattleboro winning a Division II state championship when I believe they should be in a Division I situation. Those big schools, I believe in that. When I looked at your article and I looked at the schools that were potentially being Division II, I was like, wow, that would be a great Division I. You know what I mean? So where are we at with this? What could happen? I know that there's obviously some issues, and what's gotten us to this point in high school football? I mean, we've talked numerous times, Austin, about, you know, Burlington back in the early 2000s jumping around a lot from D2 to D1. We've seen Rice go from D2 to D1. We've seen Brattleboro go from D1 to D2. Mount Anthony right now is Mount Anthony in Division II right now in football?
Correct, yes.
I mean, that to me is insane. Anyway, but so what got us here, and where do you see it going forward?
So after all that talk, basically it's the same three divisions, same teams in each of those divisions, except Rice is moving down to Division II. And as we saw in this past fall season, they were hit hard by injuries, by transfers, and low numbers. And they forfeited two games, and they didn't win any games this year. So they've fallen on some hard times. So they moved down to Division II, and that's the only change.
And
moving to the 2020 season,
right?
And it's 1 year alignment, so like they can have this conversation next year. They will have this conversation next year. The four division alignment, I think I'm in agreement with you guys. It was kind of like a cool little idea where you kind of matched up teams that were like-sized, maybe competitive on that same level. But when you have a school like CVU, it's like, no, we need to be in the top division. We can't be in the second-tier division. We're 1,300 kids. We should be playing against other schools that are close to our size. We can't be playing, you know, name your school in Division II. Like a Fairhaven or something like that. So that's where the thing started rolling. It's like, well, if CVU has to be in D1, we have to find another team that can go down to D2, and that was Hartford. And then there's some other schools.
And they're not liking that with Hartford's history.
Obviously. I think they were okay. They might have been okay
with
that.
I don't think they were, from what you told me and wrote about, they weren't necessarily the team most concerned with that division alignment.
No, and then Rice, if they were in this four-division formula or format, if they were in D2, they were going to petition to go down to D3.
Hartford was.
No, Rice was.
Rice was, okay.
So that's where you had, and then there were other schools, you know, Burlington, South Burlington, I think wanted to be in D1. I mean, you're combining two of the biggest schools in the state. They should probably be in D1, even though they have some hard times in terms of participation numbers. So then at that point, when there's multiple schools kind of hemming and hawing over where they're placed, I think they decided to scratch it this year.
Let me just ask a quick question. I'm gonna let you jump. So my question is it a school's choice to where they want to be? I mean, I thought historically it was you're just placed where you're placed and that's it. I mean, can schools tell you where they tell the VPA, hey, that we want to be Division II, we want to be Division III?
Well, it's a little confusing because there's multiple levels of how you decide these things. You know, at the coaches level, they have a alignment committee. They have a formula and they come up with, you know, the divisional alignment. And then at this level, it's the ADs. They meet and they discuss it and they voted on. They turn down the vote for the four divisions. So I think it really starts. I know it starts with the coaches' alignment, but I really think it's the ADs that really decide where they're placed. But had they voted yes on this four division thing, it goes to the VPA football committee. And I think. And then after that, it's the Activity Standards Committee, which is also a branch of the VPA. I think you to petition up or down in football, this is only football, to petition up or down, you need 2/3 majority vote Other sports, you don't need to have that. I think you can't petition down in any other sport.
Correct.
But you can petition up in other sports. But in terms of football, you need a 2/3 majority vote. So it never got to that. I don't know where it's going to go from here. I mean, further discussions for sure. But at the moment, we're pretty much the status quo.
So to get people up to speed, and I'm going to go off of not the four division alignment you said you typed up in your story this week, but the revised one that was then turned down again. Division one under the proposed alignment that failed would have consisted of BFA St. Albans, St. Johnsbury, Essex, Middlebury, Rutland, Burton, and CVU. Division two would have consisted of Hartford, Colchester, Mount Mansfield, Brattleboro, Mount Anthony, Rice, and Burlington, South Burlington. Division three would have been Linden, Fairhaven, North Country, Mount Abe, Bellows Falls, Milton, Spalding, and U32. And then all of the smallest programs would have taken up Division four. So it would have worked out to seven teams, 8 and 8. And it's confused. Like Alex, you were there when I saw this, when you sent it to me, I was like, that makes too much sense. That'll never happen. But it wasn't for the reasons I thought. It makes sense. CVU should be a Division I team. Burlington, South Burlington hasn't been good enough. They are only a co-op because they've made to survive because they've made the point that their demographics don't support football like schools their size should. Mount Anthony hasn't been good for a long time. Rice probably shouldn't go any lower than D2 in a four division scenario, in my opinion. But given that they and all of the other programs at Rice have had numbers troubles, all of the fall programs sort of were struggling for numbers because enrollment at Rice, as I've understood it, has dipped more in the last year or two than it had in the period before that. So it makes sense that they can still attract athletes in different ways. They should still probably be, you know, above D3. They shouldn't be necessarily playing Mount Abraham or, you know, look at U32, relatively new football programs. Then you look at the other teams in there, Brattleboro, Mount Mansfield, who's been fallen down since their championship, Colchester, Hartford hasn't been the Hartford we knew. And they're also, you know, looking, I think their enrollment is like 480 kids or so, maybe less than that now. That's not a Division I team in any formula. So it's, to me, it's frustrating that they wouldn't go through with a change here, because like I think what you heard, Alex, was something about the travel being an issue. Meanwhile, they'll send hockey teams all over the state. They'll send hockey teams out of state. I believe Missisquoi Hockey is going to play Brookline, Mass, or somewhere in Massachusetts, right? Like 5-hour bus trip. But we can't send too many teams across Vermont too much. I don't know. There's so much conflicting and issues.
Could it be semantics? Like, what if you didn't call it Division 1, 2, 3, 4? It was just, you know,
Tom Perry, the Colchester coach, who's the alignment chair, kind of said that. It's like, what if we called it 1AA?
Yeah.
Maybe that kind of changes things. Because you look at the D2, almost all those schools are traditionally D1 schools.
Since D1 expanded, yes.
Since D1 expanded. So maybe they give it a go next year. The travel concern piece, I think, it really shouldn't be a concern because you have 8 or 9 games a year.
Yeah. So you're traveling four times.
I think the piece about the travel was, at least from Burlington, South Burlington's perspective, is let's play teams that are close by for that community connection.
That's flimsy at best.
Well, they're traveling to play Rutland. If they're playing in Division I, they're going to Rutland. They're going they'd have to travel anyway. If these
Burton, yeah,
Burton, they have to go to.
It's
St.
not like
Johnsbury.
The towns are somehow further apart than
it's
they've
Vermont.
Ever been.
It's Vermont,
right?
That stuff kills me.
All right, let me just get, because we don't have a whole lot of time here with them. We have a text line here. Paul, the head coach of the BFA St. Albans girls team, just sent a text and said, could you have Alex touch on why so many girls teams went down from Division I in basketball? There are only 13 teams in Division I now.
Oh, yeah, we've gone over this in the past.
Yeah, you wrote the story on the alignment thing in the spring, I think.
This was the year the VPA decided to make Division I smaller based on the gulf between the 12th and 13th teams in Division I and what used to be the bottom 3 or 4 teams in Division I. So they were going to limit Division I to, I think, 12, and then teams could petition up to it if they wanted, like Rice, or they would otherwise be like it would be basically the Big 12. And that was a decision they made for, you know, the sake of competitiveness, because ultimately those bottom teams in Division I weren't competing at the level of those teams at the top of Division I or anywhere close to it.
So going back, so I hope that answers the question for you, Paul. And thanks again for the text. And you can text us, too, on the text line, 802-655-6672. We're talking to Alex Abrami of the Free Press over here at 101.3 The Game. So getting back to football, if this was to happen, let's say they go into next season and they change the semantics of it and they call it something that everybody's comfortable with. My biggest question is, when a Division III team wins two championships in a row, are we going to see them moving up to that next division? Or when you're in it, are you in it? Like, that's the thing for me. Like, I don't care who's in it. I want you to stay in it. You know what I mean? If you're a Division I team and you're having 10 years of bad luck and not winning, I'm sorry. I kind of like what Shep said from CVU, and he kind of said, we're CVU. We want to, even though I think their record has been very poor the last couple mm-hmm. years, we want to build our program to be a Division I powerhouse. That's what we expect ourselves to do. Do you own where you are? Do you stay where you are? Do you expect, is that, to me, it's like when I was growing up, when I was in high school in the early 90s, I don't remember schools jumping around at all. And now in the last 20 years, I feel like there are schools that have jumped divisions two or three times, four times in the last 10, 15 years. That just can't happen.
I think it'll be more fluid than that. I think, especially since it's a year-to-year schedule, year-to-year alignment, I think they kind of view sometimes the lower divisions as, if you have to go down, you build your program up, yeah. and then you come back to where you're supposed to be. So I don't
get that in high school sports. I just don't get it.
I'm looking at these four divisions they laid out. I don't think there's a need. Like, I look at the division, what would be the Division III teams. They're all former Division II teams that were never really Division I teams, at least in the last 10 or 15 years. I don't think any of those teams would ever need to move. I look at Division III, Springfield, Woodstock, Oxbow, Otter Valley, Pulteney, Fairfax, Mill River. None of those teams would ever need to move up. Right. Those schools aren't getting bigger.
Yep.
Those teams aren't getting bigger. They're comfortably in that like capacity. Maybe if you named it D1A and 1AA, there could be some back and forth between those two. But I look at those and like maybe one would go up, one would go down, but that's it. I don't think they would need to, because those teams have all played against each other anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting conversation. I mean, I can go all day about this. I just don't want you to go anywhere. If you're D1, you're D1.
Alex, can you stay?
You want to hang? Yes, sir. You want to hang?
I can hang. We didn't even talk about eight-man football, because that's something that's kind of bubbling under the surface.
Well, we just got a text, and the text line said, why don't we talk about wrestling ever? So, I mean, we get into that too. You know what I mean? And who knows? Look at Alex. Look at me like, what, we're going to talk about wrestling too?
There's a big meet going on right now.
I know. There's big meets going all over. My good buddy coaches at Colchester. And I mean, that's unbelievable. Those are huge programs. I'm like, what Mount Anthony's done in the world of wrestling in the last, 100 years? It's unbelievable.
It feels like it.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's Out in Left Field time. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, Aaron. What do we got today, pal?
Kansas man asks a judge to allow him to have a sword fight with his ex-wife.
Oh, there you go.
A Kansas man has asked an Iowa judge to let him engage in a sword fight with his ex-wife and her attorney so that he can rend their souls from their bodies. The judge had the power to let the parties resolve their disputes on the field of battle legally, David Ostrom said, adding in his filing that trial by combat has never been explicitly banned or restricted as a right in these United States. He also asked the judge for 12 weeks' time so he could secure Japanese samurai swords. His motion filed in Shelby County District Court stemmed from his frustrations with his ex-wife's attorney. I think I've met Mr. Hudson's absurdity with my own absurdity, Ostrom said, adding that his former wife could choose Hudson to act as her champion.
Someone's seen way too much Game of Thrones and taken it way too literally.
Hudson argued that in his legal response that because a duel could end in death, such ramifications likely outweigh those of property tax and custody issues.
Now, what about a fencing suit? Like, you throw the fencing suit on, then you win it takes all.
I think the rending a soul from a body requires murder.
Oh, yeah, that's trouble.
Yeah,
I missed that one.
Basically, this was the legal way of saying, I want to actually kill my ex-wife and her attorney.
I want permission to try to kill him.
See, this is a good lesson why you should always make sure you marry the right person. You know what I mean?
You don't want it's them important. Trying to convince a judge to let them murder you.
Yeah, that's not good. That would make me a little nervous.
That's... Mr. Ostrom needs to realize that the United States aren't part of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah. I mean, rend their souls is a little scary to me. That if somebody, you know, that would make me nervous.
It's intense wording.
Yeah, that's strong. What happened to this guy?
At the end, it says the judge said in his own filing that he will not be issuing any decisions anytime soon. So it's still on the table, technically. Like,
So the judge said, let me think about this?
Well, basically what he said was, I want you guys to shut up for a while.
Okay.
But I'm assuming Mr. Ostrom is hoping it means let me think about this.
I hope somebody's watching this gentleman, you know. He's watching, you know.
When those samurai swords get here from Japan, he might decide to take things into his own hands.
Yeah, that's a little scary. That's no question out. That's out in left field, no question about it. Alex, aren't you glad you stayed for that? I mean, you just don't get this kind of entertainment on a Saturday morning.
Morning.
It did. Unbelievable. There's a lot of crazy people out there. And, you know, and nowadays, we get the 24-hour news. Everybody knows everybody's business quickly. Crazy stories like this, this is the norm. I mean, this is literally the norm. Things like this happen all over the world. You know, now you hear about all the
craziest
time.
Thing is it isn't in Florida, man.
No, well, there you go. I told you about when I was in Florida, the kid that thought Florida, Vermont was in Washington State, Washington, D.C.
Yeah, just the other side of D.C.
Yeah.
That's the one just beyond Montgomery County, PG County.
He's like, oh, yeah, I drive through Vermont all the time. I said, you do? Where are you going? He goes, oh, I'm going to West Virginia. I said, West Virginia? Where do you think Vermont is? Just outside Washington, D.C.
Well, and to go the other way, I was in Georgia, and I had a guy from Georgia tell me, I've never met a Canadian before.
Yeah, well... It's sports update time, my man.
The high school coach and the high school reporter who comments on that coach. How do they do a show together? It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
So since you're in here now, Alex Abrami, joining Austin Danforth and I think the other big news this week, obviously, was that Austin is named. He got his second Sports Writer of the Year award, which has tied you right now. It's 2-2 now.
It is 2-2.
I mean, so now it's on.
Now we got an 18-hole playoff.
I mean, now Alex, and I mean, now it's getting real, Alex.
I can't vote for him anymore.
Exactly. Now we got to set your game up.
I'm canceling my membership.
And by the way, did you notice that he's in studio now? All of a sudden, he's just, I'll just come in. Maybe I should just come in now. I'll come in and do this thing live. Did you notice that?
Does this mean we're on the clock right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's on record.
This is Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. 802-655-6672. Austin Danforth. Myself and now Alex Abrami in studio. We were just talking about the potential that almost happened with the athletic directors trying to vote on if they wanted to go to a four division tier, which I think would be great. Maybe it's semantics that doesn't look good. We were talking about the way they lined up. You know, looking at both those, and we'll end it here unless somebody wants to talk about it more. That Division Two, and then we're going to call it Division Two. That was some lineup of teams. I mean, that was no joke. It wasn't as if you're looking at, you know, putting teams that shouldn't be in there. And that would have been a strong Division One. So to me, the more we're talking about it, I mean, it looks like the way to go. You know what I mean? It feels right to me when you look at the teams that you'd be competing against.
What kills me too, Alex, is like the idea of people might be upset because they're not in a division called Division One. So now we would potentially have to cater to football once again, which had its own alignment structure forever that made everybody in every other sport mad. We have to cater to them by calling their divisions different things than the rest of the sports. So just because they would look at Division Two as a demotion when ultimately they're just getting reshuffled into a more competitive league. So you're going to hear me talk about this for weeks.
But like you said, it makes too much sense. But I also get where the CVU athletic director, Dan Shepperton, is coming from. That they should be playing against the top schools in the state.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2-3 years, if they're still the same 2-6 program, then yeah, maybe they should move down and maybe they will. And we can't just zero in on CVU. It's not just them that were among the ADs that didn't want to do this.
Right.
But I think things take time to change, right? Like we're talking about the VPA.
You think that CVU should be in like one of the highest? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is I can see why CVU. We'll use them as an example because you know Shep was the one that was quoted in your article. I mean, you can see why a school like that wants to be in a Division One. They probably should be. But what I'm saying is, to me, this isn't about divisions. This is just about competitive balance, and all these leagues look right. I mean, they fit right. This is interesting. So he's got a text on the text line. By the way, you can join us in the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Chris from Champlain said, it's crazy. New York soccer moves up a division during the regular season. I can't believe this. And when the playoffs come, they move back down to their regular division. I think it's unfair. What do you think?
That they're probably talking about
playing up and then playing like
teams across the lake in the Plattsburgh area, which is a very sparsely populated section.
Sure.
They are forced to play against all these upper division teams, and then they get to go back down when it comes to like the state tournament time.
And that happens in the state too.
Oh, for sure.
A lot. You'll see a lot of teams. I'm trying to think of an example in Division II soccer that plays a lot of Division I. They play in the lake, and then when they go into the Division II tournament, they run rampshot of the Division II tournament.
Soccer for years was in the lake, and then they played in the D1 tournament.
Right. Right.
Which is sort of inverted.
There definitely have been teams that have, maybe that's kind of how it is. It's more inverted for schools here because they're playing, it's a different animal. So you're getting, their record might not be indicative of how good they are in the division they're playing.
Better comparisons, Mount Abraham, baseball and field hockey, always play in the Metro, which means they're going to be right around 500 if it's a good season, or maybe better if they're better. But, they're going to go into the Division II tournament playing lesser teams with a worse record than, these lesser teams. And, they quite often compete very highly. So
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation. Let's move this thing over to UVM men's basketball. A week ago, we were kind of talking about how there were some worries about this basketball team. Tough loss at home. Alex against Stony Brook and, this team. It's so funny how you think of UVM basketball right now. Going into this season, I mean, we talked really about how unbelievable they could be. I mean, I was thinking, boy, what if they only lose two games in the off, in the preseason, and then they're going to run rampshot through this division, this conference, and then they're going to win. They could be like an 11 seed, and now all of a sudden they've kind of come back to earth, got beat by Stony Brook, but have turned it around and played two good basketball games back to back. Now, are they starting to roll now that they're in the America East?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's tough to tell because we thought a couple weeks ago before Dartmouth, before Lipscomb, they seemed to right the ship, and then they had the Dartmouth game where they had to gut that one out, and then they had the loss to Stony Brook.
Right. At home
and giving up 81 points, like 81 points, UVM basketball giving up 81 points at home to a league team. That's like, when's the last time that's happened? So, but I think in the last week, they've kind of shown what they're going to be the rest of the league season. We got, there's 13 games to go. They're still really good defensively, and they still have the best player in the league by far, Anthony Lamb. And Steph Smith has come on in terms of scoring lately. Ben Shungu, I think, is finally healthy, or is as healthy as he's going to be this season. And we've seen what he can do. It's not just the he's not going to score 20 points a game, but he's going to get that 8 to 12. But it's the defense kind of leading the show from the point and being that third option. And then there's Everett Duncan, who scored for the first time in his career, led the team in scoring when down at UMBC. He scored 15 points. I think 12 came in the first half. So that's the first time in his career. He's a senior now that he led the team in scoring. And then I don't think he scored at Binghamton the other night, if I'm mistaken.
That sounds right, yeah.
So so it's him finding more consistency, being able to be that third or fourth option, being a little more aggressive on the boards. But I still like them to win it all, but that's not really saying a heck of a lot because they are still the most talented team.
But winning it all, which we expect them to do, and being what we want them to be or what we kind of – winning it all wasn't the issue. Winning the mirror, that's not what you were thinking. You're thinking – this team can go into a tournament and win, could play second weekend. That's what I think some fans were thinking this basketball team. I guess my question to you is somebody that's around them a lot. Is that too big? Was that too big an expectation for what this talent is?
I don't think it was. But I do think that week, that St. John's Virginia week, I don't want to say it got to their heads, but John Becker, their coach, has kind of said a couple times, that was a lot of pressure. And a lot of expectations.
But the Virginia game, they didn't play well against Virginia. I mean, Lamb played well.
But that's the thing. Like, we've seen this several times in Lamb's career where he's on the national stage and he does something spectacular.
Sure.
And for an 8-minute stretch in the second half against Virginia, he hit seven threes.
Best player on the floor.
Right. And here Anthony goes again. He's going to lead the team, or they're going to have some, close game against a national power, and then they fall short in the end. And I think that got from the outside, yeah, it probably got in their heads a little bit because there is so much national media attention and the expectations locally. And then they didn't play well. I mean, we saw some of the results that they had. They just weren't playing as a team. And I think they're back on that path now. Can we still think that they can win a game in the NCAA tournament? Yeah, sure, because they've been close the last couple of years. I still think that's an expectation they should have because they've won the league twice, two out of the last 3 years, and they've won the regular season title 3 years in a row. They have, what, three or four losses in league over the last 4 years? So they should be the favorites. They should win out, or not win out. They should win come March to get to the tourney, and then it's a question of who they're matched up against, because that's been the issue the last couple of years. But I still think they have talented enough players where they can at least have a shot at winning in that first round.
But the issue is, unless they, you know, win their next 15, 16 games in a row, they're probably not going to crack that 13 seed ceiling.
No, they're looking at the 13 at best right now.
Yeah.
But to the UVM's, but to put a feather in their cap, there's no elite teams in the country. There's no one team that you think, or there's no two, three, four teams that think, oh my God, Vermont can't compete with them. I mean, name the powerhouse in the country right now. There isn't one.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, there isn't. I mean, you know, Gonzaga, Duke, okay? I mean, people were talking about Kansas. I mean, there's nobody out there. I mean, some of the best teams in the country now, they're talking Dayton was risen. Dayton ranked fifth in the nation? I mean, right now.
They are?
I think they are. They got beat last night.
Rutgers is going to make the tournament for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
So this is the year for UVM. That's why I think it's, you know, this is the year that they could win a game or two potentially with the matchups being conducive. So right now you're talking about this UVM team. Going into the season roster-wise, I mean, I thought this was the greatest team he had ever had. I mean, I honestly, right, Austin? I mean, let's be honest with each other. Like, I was so psyched about this season. I thought, I'm looking at their pre-conference schedule thinking, oh, win, loss, maybe. Win, I mean, I just thought, you know, I thought this was done.
On paper, you look at it, you're like, they lose one key guy.
Right. And so I guess my question is this team, like, is this one of the best he's ever had? Is this, I mean, are we not there yet?
I don't think we're there yet because they've had too many stumbling blocks along the way. But out of all that, they still have they had a 10-5 non-conference record.
Very good, right? So
that's what I'm saying.
The
fourth straight, they won 10 games right. Non-conference.
And we look at that as failure for UVM. That's what's crazy. That's what's so great about what Becker's done to me. That we actually look at what UVM's done to this point and think, boy, what a disappointing start of the season. That's crazy to think about this small program up here. They play in Patrick Gym, which is, you know, until we do the renovations. If you're from Vermont, Patrick Gym is the mecca. But let's face it, you know, you're a kid coming out of somewhere in the nation. You want to come play for someplace. Patrick Gym isn't like the most intriguing place that you got to where you're going to play your home games. I mean, what he's been able to do, what this program is, that the expectation is this high. I mean, that's unbelievable. You don't even realize what a great season they've had so far, realistically.
It's 10-5, and when you look at some of the the Greensboro loss came down to the last second.
Yep.
The Stony Brook defeat, they had the game won with 3 or 4 minutes to go and they coughed it up,
right.
Really. But
had a big lead against Ryder in the championship of that tournament down
right.
the league.
Right, in the first half, but they got run off the floor
in
the second
question.
Half.
No question, right.
You look at their losses, there's three. They could very easily have Backer go differently.
Yeah, right,
exactly.
Would that change their spot if they were to win out from now on? Does that change where they go to the NCAA tournament?
You mean OC-wise?
Yeah. Let's just say that they win the Stony Brook game, they win the Greensboro game, and we go from there. They win out. Would that change? You think potentially those couple games could change where they get seeded in the NCAA tournament?
I think so.
Right.
I think so because it's a team that the committee knows. I mean, the last couple of years they were 13 last year, and they gave Florida State a pretty good run, and they've been a 27 win plus program for the last 3 years.
They'd probably be a top 25 team if they had won those two games and won out. They'd be looking at like a 20 game winning streak.
Wow!
And going into the tournament, they'd probably be like the 24th ranked team in the nation at that point.
You think about a team like UVM; they have so much more pressure on them than say Duke does. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like so much more. You know, you forget about that, but they have to win all these games to put themselves in even a glimmer of a chance to get themselves, say, a 12 seed in the NCAA tournament.
Well, here's the thing. It all comes down to those 3 days in early March. They could be undefeated or one loss and everything. And as we saw against Stony Brook, if they falter in critical moments, they lose, they're out. I mean, they're not getting in that large bid. Not now.
Right.
So that's what makes it so difficult and so much pressure when you could talk all you want about March Madness, but they need to win the American East Tournament to have any chance.
You said Anthony Lamb, he's the best player in the league. I mean, he's every time he's been on national television, I think he's been a superstar. I mean, the nation loves Anthony Lamb when he's on television. There's no question. Do we see him in an NBA uniform next year? Is he getting the call?
There was a ESPN mock draft that had him like in the high 40s. But I don't know. I think that's I still think that might be a stretch because he's in that position where, you know, he's 6'6", but that's undersized for the NBA. Yeah. And he's not quick enough and then he's not big enough. But who knows, because the way the NBA is going, maybe his game might suit some team out there. But it's just so difficult for American East players to get to that next level. Yeah. But he's definitely a professional basketball player at some point, at somewhere.
No question. I'll tell you, it's an unbelievable story what they are. It really is. I mean, I'd love to see him on an NBA roster someplace. Greatest best player ever to play here? I would say Roberson.
No. I don't think he is.
Who's the best?
I would say Coppernath.
Coppernath's the greatest player ever to play here. Yeah.
I would put Lamb in the top five.
Yeah.
I think he'd be, if we were doing all, we did the all-decade team a couple weeks ago, and
I forget the greatness of Taylor Coppernath and what he brought to the table day in and day out.
Which, that sentence is nuts to hear out loud.
It is. But you do. I know it is, because coming in, there was no expectation of Taylor Coppernath as a freshman. I mean, that's just a kid that developed here and became one of the best players in the country. And what a career he had overseas. I mean,
he had a 10-year career overseas, couple MVPs, couple titles in Europe. And then what did he average junior and senior? It was like over 20 points a game. So.
He was right, basically like, I want to say top 10 in the country both of his last 2 years in scoring. It was like 24-6 one year and 25-4 another year.
I think at some points late in the year, he may have even been like 1 or 2.
That might be. But like, what Tom Brennan loves to bring up is he averaged 40 points a game, or 40, was it 40?
40. It's 40 because it's 43.
And yeah, 40 points a game in his last two conference championship games. Like, oh, okay, no worries.
Yeah, you know, I want to say you forget about the great, but when you watch the teams play today, you just kind of forget that Taylor was the dominant force and what he brought. And again, I don't people recognize his professional career was as great, if not greater, than what he did here at UVM.
And it, the way he scored was so workmanlike.
Oh, yeah.
Like he would put up a workman like devastating 39 points. Like, who does that?
And unassuming, like the perfect personality, like, oh, you know, shrug the shoulders, yeah, no big deal. All right, we take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some NFL. Okay, because listen, with all the other stuff that's going on, you forget that it's NFC and AFC Championship weekend.
We also haven't even mentioned LSU.
I know. What about LSU?
Joe Burrow, LSU. Well,
there's more talk about Odell Beckham Jr. being all messed up on, you know, we got to talk about that too. All right, so much to get to. It's me. It's Alex. It's Austin. And it's my boy Aaron. We'll be right back.
Go Tiger.
Bringing you another day closer to game day. It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
Championship weekend. What do we got going? We got the 49ers and we got the Green Bay Packers. We got Kansas City and Tennessee. But before we get into that, I have to bring it up. I mean, can Bill O'Brien mess anything up any more than what he did last week? I mean, he shouldn't have gotten by Buffalo with the decision he made not to kick the field goal late in there. And I'm so new to this. I mean, I've had social media for a long time, but I'm kind of new to putting things out there. Every time I put something out there, people get mad at me. They disagree with me, which is fine.
Well, that's what Twitter's about.
Yeah, evidently. But Bill O'Brien making the decision, let's just go back to Bill O'Brien. This is why coaching is so important, I've realized last 2 weeks in the NFL. Not during the regular season, but in the playoffs. You have got to have a coach that gets it. And I don't know what's going on, but the Buffalo-Tennessee game, Buffalo-Houston game, first round of the playoffs, if you remember, Buffalo had the big lead. Houston came back. The decision that McDermott made to go for it on 4th and 29 on the 50-yard line instead of punting with 3 timeouts left, I think there was like 2 minutes, 50 seconds left, instead of punting it down, and you know that Houston's going to run the ball 3 times, but he goes for it. You're thinking, what are you out of your mind? You give the ball back to Houston, and Houston does exactly what you expect Houston to do. I think they rushed it 3 times, and he was looking at... He turned the ball over in a position where running it 3 times, getting under 10 yards, was going to give them a legitimate shot at a field goal. And Bill O'Brien, instead of saying, I'm going to take the field goal, and a Buffalo team that looked like they were inept on offense, You're going to kick a field goal, go up 6 points, and make them have to score a touchdown to beat you. Decides, I'm going to go for it on fourth down. And then I'm not only am I going to go for it, if I don't get it, I'm going to give Buffalo an opportunity. All I need is a field goal to tie it and send me to overtime, which happened. And luckily for Bill O'Brien, his team found a way to win the football game. They move on.
In spite of him.
In spite of him. Fair enough. Whatever the reasoning is, the team wins the football game, so you kind of forget about that. Now fast forward to last week. His team comes out and goes up 24-0 on the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City. He gets in a situation where Kansas City scores a touchdown. It's 24-7. You know, Kansas City's starting to get some momentum. You can see they're starting to feel good, but you're still up 24-7. It's the second quarter, and you go 3-and-out, and you think, okay, now you punt the ball down. No, not Bill O'Brien. You're on your own 30. I'm going to go for it, and I'm going to send a message here. He goes for it, doesn't get it, and Kansas City scores a touchdown, and then we know what happened after that. The kickoff, he fumbles, they score. In Kansas City, who has maybe the worst first quarter of their history, has the best second quarter of their history in the same game. And Bill O'Brien thinks in his mind that going for it in that situation and going for the first down, there is just no way that the reward is worth that risk. Even if he gets the first down there. Because what happens, you start a snowball effect. So think about it for 1 second, where that game maybe goes. Let's say he punts, and they got to go 80 yards to score a touchdown. Let's say they score a touchdown. Now it's 24-14, and it's probably halftime. And you're up by 10 points at home. On the road. And, you know, I mean, I don't get the mentality. To me, that's almost fireable to me. I mean,
a fireable offense.
Seriously, think about it. Think about what that started. The snowball that started by Bill O'Brien.
Conduct detrimental to the franchise.
And then somebody says, hey, you know, if he's going to go for it there, he should have gone for it when he kicked the field goal. I said, well, he wanted to, but their personnel was wrong, so he couldn't do it then. And to me, I have no problem with adding points, right? You're up 21-0 on the road. Get the field. You're up 24-0. Get points. Keep scoring.
Wait, didn't they call timeout on that field goal?
That was just because the personnel was wrong. You could tell he wanted to go for it. I think that's what ended up happening. The personnel piece was
wrong. So they called a timeout and then find your... I think he said in the post game they didn't have a good play.
The reason was...
which I don't know how you don't have a good play for...
I don't know. I think it just proves that the head coach is as an important piece as your quarterback is in the NFL.
And speaking of quarterbacks, imagine how Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins feel. Like two guys who are top five in their position, top five best at what they do in the world, and they have nothing to show for it because this guy bumbled his way through two games.
He's a nincompoop.
It's just crazy to me. It really is. And I think he's probably a really good coach. Their teams have been successful. I mean, it's not like this is a bad franchise. They win games. They go to the playoffs. But those decisions there make you think, what? And McDermott's another one. That decision he made for Buffalo. Like, what are you thinking? Why aren't you punting? I know this is 2 weeks ago, but come on.
How good a coach are you, though, if you don't know your limitations and you either don't have someone on your staff specifically to help you in those scenarios or educate you or whatever, or you're just not making the right... Like, ultimately, if you're a good coach, you figure out where those weaknesses are, and you play either away from them or, you know, fix them.
Yeah, you'd think the OC would come up and tap him on the shoulder and be like, hey,
but you're the head
this
coach.
Isn't,
pay
this
some,
isn't it.
Pay
but
some
you're the
dude
head coach.
Whatever you need to pay him to just do that one thing for you.
But here's that. But you're the head coach. You make the decision. And then the people say, well, I think you're piling on. Like, even if they get the first down to me there, it's not worth it. Like, the alternative is not worth it. Like, that's the thing that gets it just, and it proves, and then you turn around, you look at the coaches that are still alive in this thing, and you got four guys that can really coach a football team. I mean, that you look at it right now, and I just think that's what you have right
now.
When
was the fake punt? Early in the second quarter?
Like, middle of the second quarter. Like, you know, it was right after they scored. It was 24-0. Kansas, there was a long kick. They brought the ball back to, I think it was, they brought it to Houston's side of the field. Kansas City scored like in three plays.
Yeah.
And then, and again, I mean, the momentum was coming, and I'm not saying that Kansas City doesn't end up winning the football game, but if it's 24-14 at halftime, it's a lot different than losing and blowing a 24-point lead in 10 minutes.
Kansas City finished on a 51-7 run.
Yeah, it's crazy.
like it's basketball.
You could almost make the argument that it was like the greatest collapse. I know there's 28-3, and then there's the 35-3 when the other Houston team blew. But I think just in terms of a collapse, 51-7 after going up 24-0. You could argue that's the worst collapse.
Start the Avalanche. He started it. Right. The decision he makes puts the ball in motion for that. That's the problem.
I want to go back to you saying now we have four guys left who can coach football. Like, how would you rank the guys between the headsets from here on out? Because I think Andy Reid builds a good program, does good things, but he has comically bad sense of time management. It's a long-running joke for decades.
And by the way, if the NFL, if the game of football was a person and had a face, it would be Andy Reid, right? Andy Reid looks like he'd be like, if he was the NFL, he would be like, you know what I mean? Big guy, big mustache, always got his, you know, his eyebrows. Like,
wearing just shorts when it's cold.
Oh, yeah, man. Like, Andy Reid is football to me. He just looks like football.
It's funny because he's known for having like the best playbook and one of the best playbooks in the NFL. But the way he looks, you would think his play sheet is like a Waffle House menu. I've heard that joke made before. Like, it's just the funniest guy.
I give passes to guys like Reid because to me, you know, I mean, he had a good game plan against New England against them when his Eagles played the Patriots in the Super Bowl. I just thought that, you know, McNabb just didn't have the stomach to get it done. You know, I don't look at it. I felt like he was the reason for that. Sometimes I feel like, you know, coaches, you know, sometimes your roster just isn't good enough to beat a juggernaut. And that's kind of what happened with him. I think this is the year if he's going to win it. This is the year. The only team that I think stands in his way potentially is San Francisco. They are such a good football team, even though I'm not sold on Garoppolo looked really bad last week against Minnesota. I mean, the interception should have cost him.
He doesn't have to be great, though,
with that running attack and defense. And with that defense, that front line is unbelievable.
That recipe is a bad match for Kansas City, should that be the Super Bowl we look at.
You're bypassing – Titans have no chance?
I was going to get to Vrabel. I think he's the best coach left.
I think so, too.
And he's proven it.
Wasn't I saying last week, I kind of liked, I was asking, who did we have, whoever we had on, I was asking,
Vinny Iyer from Sporting News.
Did the Titans maybe find something they could bottle up and keep doing? I liked them at least to cover, but I didn't.
Titans go into Kansas City and outscore them, though?
Here's the thing. It's a perfect matchup for the Titans because not only does, like Austin said, not only does Andy Reid have trouble with time management, which will be huge in this game with the whole trying to limit possessions and run the clock for the Titans, but their run defense has no chance against Derrick Henry. He's going to tear them up like it's going to get ugly.
But again, you might be right. I don't know. I just don't see them being able to score enough points. I mean, even if they play a great game defensively, Kansas City's going to get theirs. You know that's going to happen.
This got lost in the championship game last year because it was so great and had a great finish. But like the Patriots owned time of possession against the Chiefs last year.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way to do it.
It's absolutely the way.
And Vrabel, and I think Vrabel right now is the best coach that's left. I really do. And what he did against the Patriots was spectacular. I mean, it's tough for Patriot fans to swallow that. But then to go on the road and have that game plan to stop. I mean, Lamar Jackson looked like... I mean, the ball was coming out of his hand like Eli Manning was throwing it. I mean, Lamar Jackson looked confused. That high power offense in Baltimore looked inept, and that's the best offense we saw all year. And now that I'm talking about it, you know what? Tennessee does have a chance to get this done tomorrow. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. Text line now. You can join us now on the text line at 802-655-6672, or you can call us and join our conversation. Dennis from Georgia said, "Just able to start listening. Did I miss Jeff's segment on Kirk Cousins to the Super Bowl? Ha ha ha."
Did you pick Kirk Cousins to make the...
Yes. I truly believe this season, when I made this prediction, that if the team stayed healthy, they were the best team in the NFC. With all they had offensively, I just looked, they just did. But I'll tell you, they didn't look good against San Francisco. And Kirk Cousins did not look good.
They have a great roster, except at quarterback.
Yeah, well, but is it the quarterback or is it the scheme?
No, I think it's
I've seen lesser quarterbacks win championships.
It's both. I don't think they utilize their talent well enough, and I don't think Kirk Cousins was necessarily the right fit.
And fair enough, I was wrong, okay?
But
Dennis,
also,
I got it.
I mean, the thing is, the Niners were so well-rounded this year.
They are good.
Garoppolo is their weakest point, and that dude's pretty solid for an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I guess not watching a lot of San Francisco games, Alex and Austin and Aaron, I guess I expected more out of him, and I watched the game last week, and he looked confused at times. The two picks he threw in the middle of the field were terrible, and I guess that's happening a lot for him. They blew Green Bay out earlier this season, but you know, listen, Aaron Rodgers goes on the road, he wins, he's a winner. They're a good defense, their offense is playing much better, but they showed signs of breaking last week in the second half at home against Seattle. I can't see them going out there and winning, but...
There are some quarterbacks who, in the big moments, you can never rule out, and Rodgers is one of those guys. That's why it's great to see him in the playoffs.
I wholeheartedly agree with the Aaron Rodgers assessment. You might not like him as a guy, but damn, can he play quarterback.
No, he's a great player. I mean, but do they have enough on offense to be able to slow down what San Francisco did on defense? Because I don't know if it was as much as Kirk Cousins is a bad quarterback, or... San Francisco's D line was a lot better than Minnesota's offensive line because he was they were in his face seconds as soon as he had the football in a lot of cases.
Hasn't Green Bay this year sort of evolved on the fly? Like being able to actually run the football this year a little bit is a big change from what they've been the last few years. I almost feel like that could work in their favor against a good defense like San Francisco, where, you know, you might not be able to game plan for the team you're going to face in Green Bay. That's my two cents.
All right, we got like 10 seconds before the segment ends. Let's make some predictions. All right, who's going to the Super Bowl? Austin, who do you got?
Kansas City, San Francisco.
Okay. Who do you got?
Same two teams.
Look at you two.
Left brain, right brain. I mean, it happens all the time.
This is embarrassing over here.
I've got San Fran as well, but I love the matchup for Tennessee. I think they will control time of possession like Alex said they have to, and I think they'll find a way to win that game.
Well, it's going to be a State Farm championship for me in the Super Bowl. It's going to be Mahomes against Rodgers. And that stupid guy from the State Farm commercial is going
to
be there.
That'd be fun to watch.
Well, that's what's going to happen. Green Bay and Kansas City. Write it down, my friend. That's what's going to happen. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Hot or Not time. Don't go anywhere.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
Joining us, Alex Abrami is in studio with us today, so it's a four-man rotation. So,
special guest.
Yes, very special guest. He's in here because now Austin won his second award, so it's 2-2, so Alex is like, I'm going to start showing up more now. Enough of this winning all this.
Do I have to go Roddy Dangerfield and Caddyshack? Don't you people have homes?
Yeah. See, this is what I like. I want some saltiness between you two. Enough of this right brain, left brain stuff. I want some fighting going on. All right, it's Hot or Not time, kiddo. What do we got?
Well, Hot or Not is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston, because they have the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint you, and they offer over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes made from scratch daily. That is a good variety. There's no box mix at Superb, so go make your day superb.
We say it every week. Just do yourself a favor. You deserve it. It's supposed to snow today. It's cold outside. Doesn't matter whether it's good, you know, whether, you know, you're trying to lose weight or whatever. Enjoy it, man. They're the best cupcakes you ever have in your life. And let me just tell you one. Each one is handmade, hand-frosted. I mean, I've watched them make them. It's an ordeal. I mean, it's unbelievable what they do. It is. It literally is art. So go give your, there it is right there. It's art. Give yourself some art.
Life is short. Eat cupcakes.
That's right. Get some culture in your life, for God's sakes. Let's go.
We will never see Alex Cora chewing seeds on TV again. He's done as a manager in the MLB.
Not. I think eventually he'll come back. I think this is one of those situations where when it's all said, it's going to be a little while. But I would say that you will see Alex Cora in a dugout for some team eventually. It's just not going to be anytime soon.
I'm going to go hot. I think just everything, you know, this is not the first time. No, right? He's had a couple things pop up here with the Astros and then with the Red Sox. I think, wasn't it the iPhone thing last
year? Yeah, the iWatch or something.
Apple Watch. So, no, I think he's staying for the rest of his career. He doesn't come back and manage.
I'm in the boat with Jeff. Unless he is banned, he's going to come back. Like, there's the redemption tour. Somebody will hire him. He'll be a base coach. And then whatever team he's the base coach for, the manager is probably going to get canned because they're not very good. And we're going to have an internal candidate. And then he's going to be, you know, rehired. We're probably looking at like a 5-year cycle here.
And by the way, Pete Rose, let him free Pete Rose now. Okay. Enough is enough. With all this stuff that's gone on the last 25 years in baseball, Pete Rose is the face of baseball, for goodness sakes. Enough is enough. He should be in the Hall of Fame. Cincinnati's still making money on his likeness. If they got bobbleheads of Pete Rose, Pete Rose needs to be free. Let's go. Let's go.
The longer we go, the more the stuff he was in trouble for seems harmless.
Well, I mean, what he did was a big deal, too. I mean, you know, but at the end of the day.
But then you compare it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, let's let him back in.
I actually saw a tweet saying someone thinks the Red Sox will go back for Alex Cora once his suspension's up. That seems ludicrous.
No.
And I think he's done.
Well, Jason Varitek, right? I mean, is that what I'm hearing? Jason Varitek could be the guy?
No.
And a lot of people think Renicky will move up unless he's implicated in the investigation. I think Alex Cora's done, especially if the MLB chooses to come down on organizations harder in the future. They won't want to touch him.
Let me just real quick. Glenn from Munkin just said in the text line, the Apple Watch is under Farrell's watch, he believes. No pun intended.
Oh, right. That was the 17 season.
Yeah. No, so the Red Sox have been cheating for a little while. Okay, there. I'm good with that.
it's a thing in baseball, I think, to try and cheat from the dugout. Tom Brady should retire now.
Not. I mean, if he still thinks he can play and somebody wants to pay him, he wants to do it, play. I think the bigger story right now is what's going on in Foxborough, that his suite has been completely cleaned out and they went to they moved. I mean, I don't know. I think Tom Brady should still play if he still wants to play. That's just my feeling on it. If he still wants to play and somebody wants to pay him to play, go do it.
I'm going to say not too. I think he should still play.
And he can still and he can still do it, right? I think he can still get it done.
Look at his receivers this year.
Exactly.
And
I mean, it was you, me, and Alec. Right. I mean, and Austin. That's one of the receivers.
And his throws were bad at times, but there was also the rumor that he was playing through a shoulder injury. So when he's fully healthy, I think he still has more in the tank.
Should feels awful preachy, so I got to go not. I think he could. I think it makes sense for him, too. Like, I also was thinking about it this morning. His wife is worth a bajillion dollars. He's worth no small chunk of change himself. What, like, the difference between him making $15 million or $10 million, some cut rate deal, or $30 million like the best quarterbacks in football, what's that do for him at the end of the day? Like, does that $15 million really change his life? Like, his legacy is built on winning, and if he wants to extend and make it, push his legacy even further into the stratosphere, he needs to keep winning, and he doesn't do that making $30 million anywhere.
And it sounds like the anger that he had about the money wasn't about what he wanted. It was how them saving money on him, where the team was sending the money out to bring right. the players in. That sounded like
there has been some talk that it was a respect thing too, like that he feels for respect's sake he deserves a decent contract, because he did note that there are quarterbacks with far less accolades than him making a lot more money. But if you want to win, it shouldn't matter.
I mean, that's his legacy. That's who he is. He's the greatest winner. And part of his attraction is the fact that he is a winner, and he does what he needs to do to make sure the team wins.
Right.
I mean, that's what makes Tom Brady Tom Brady.
I don't think he should retire. I did think Colin's reasoning was interesting. His reasoning was that the teams who don't have any receiver problems right now are the ones where the quarterback can extend plays and give the receivers time. I think that's partially true. I think also partially those teams have spent money on receivers and the Patriots haven't, and that needs to change.
I mean, let me just say this too. I mean, I get where we're going here, but the Patriots were the defending Super Bowl champions. How many championships have they won the last? And we're complaining now because they this year they didn't expect their receivers to stink. You remember who they had in this roster?
Yeah, it's letting Josh Gordon go.
Gordon was, they brought in, I mean, they had a roster that looked like they were going to be dynamite. Injuries happen, bad situations happen, and they face what a lot of teams face. They didn't have the healthy guys at the end to do it. I mean, don't give me this thing that the Patriots don't have receivers. I mean, my God, they've been the standard bearer for 20 years.
They had the same caliber of receivers the last 3-4 years.
Perfect.
Except for Gronkowski, which is a glaring hole.
Sure.
But not being able to run the football effectively, not being able to block like they had because they were missing two of their five best linemen.
Right.
That makes every receiver worse.
Exactly. Exactly.
Would we talk about this if they didn't let Fitzmagic beat them in the regular season finale, and then they get the 2 seed in the bye?
Yeah, it's crazy.
They might win their divisional game and might be playing today.
Very, very true.
To be fair, what they got out of Jacoby Myers for where they got him, way more than they probably had any right to get out of him. And Edelman, playing through injury, played relatively well. And then when N'Keal Harry came back from injury, he looked very good, too. I think it was just the injuries and the timing and everything, like Jeff said, was just not in their favor.
I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, it's the Patriots. I mean, it's amazing how quickly the media just jumps, right? It's like, oh, they look at this. Look, this roster's terrible. He's got to retire. Like, give me a break. They're the Patriots. You know, they're the Patriots. They have been the organization for 20 years. And they were the organization halfway through this season until everything went to kaput because of injuries. They're
all
fine.
All right. By the time we have all the facts about this whole pitch scandal, it will be just as deep and dark as the steroid scandal from the 90s.
I would say hot. I think it's darker than the steroid scandal, to be honest with you. I mean, I really do. I think this is getting, this is arrogance more than anything else to me. And we talked off air, you know, just a second ago, and we know, is this worse than the steroid situation? To me, I think it is. I mean, I think if you know what's coming, that trumps whether you're taking HGH or a steroid. I mean, steroid is a bad situation, and that's what baseball's been. We went through that era, but this is terrible. I think it's darker than steroids.
What's kind of interesting is it almost feels like the dynamic's different. Like, the steroid era was almost like an arms race. Everyone was paranoid. It got to be the biggest swing in baseball. This is more just like, we're going to destroy people and do it in a way that people don't see. And it's always like more like evil.
The steroid thing, it also at the time wasn't illegal.
It's true.
It wasn't against the rules for baseball to do steroids. It was just it came out of, you know, trying to get an edge. This was like what it seems like the Astros have been caught doing was not allowed in any capacity, and that's different that way.
I do think it's darker. It's another level of cheating that we haven't really seen before. But with the steroids thing, that whole era kind of saved baseball. It's after the strike of '94, and then you had Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, 1998 with that home run chase to beat Maris. And everyone loved baseball at that point, right?
Yeah.
It was America's pastime again. And baseball kept its mouth shut about steroids or didn't do anything about steroids for a long time. And it was such an academic in the MLB for such a long time. Maybe that gives it kind of more of a little more lasting impact, I guess. But I still think this is way darker.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All right. Clay Travis had this to say about Odell Beckham.
I am concerned, if I am the Cleveland Browns, that Odell Beckham Jr. is on the fast track to Crazyville. I think that he's headed to Antonio Brown Town. And when you go back and you look, you start to follow these little lines of demarcation. Sooner or later, maybe you need to look in the mirror and say, maybe it's me.
So Odell Beckham is headed to Antonio Brown Town.
I think Antonio Brown is in Odell Beckham Town. I think Odell Beckham's been crazy and he's been doing stuff like this for a long time. I mean, maybe Antonio Brown's done some things that are a little bit more risque, and obviously some of the things are maybe illegal in terms of what Antonio Brown's done and detrimental to what his life is in that kind of situation. But if you've watched Odell Beckham since day one, shouldn't say since day one, since the day he made the one-handed catch against Dallas, this has been his MO. I mean, there are just guys, I've said this many times on this show, there are guys that are insanely talented players, the best in the business, but they're not winners. Odell Beckham Jr. is an incredibly talented athlete. He's going to make millions of dollars in the NFL, and he's the kind of guy you buy a ticket to go watch, but he's not a winner. And until organizations recognize that, the Giants had to see it, Cleveland's seeing it right now, that's what you have. So I think Odell Beckham is already there, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
I'm going to say not, and I still say Odell Beckham is a very me-first receiver. You saw the thing that happened through the LSU championship.
Yeah.
That was all about him. He made it all about him. And it looked like he might have been intoxicated, but whatever. He made that a lot about him handing out the money, slapping the security officer on the butt.
Mm-hmm. If you saw the thing with the bullhorn.
I saw that too.
That was pretty scary, actually.
But Antonio Brown, you know, he's a... Something is wrong with Antonio Brown, what he's done the last year or so. So I don't think Odell is at that point yet. I can't go there.
I'll say hot. I think he's approaching it. If the word is approaching Antonio Brown Town, he is approaching it. How close? I'm not sure. I don't have that measuring device yet. But I think he's on that path.
Well, he's probably ahead of Antonio Brown in terms of timing, because I think at this point in his career, at Odell's point in his career, Antonio Brown was still considered a normal person. But I think
and the best receiver in the league, which you can't say about Odell right now.
But the difference, I think, right now is Odell hasn't hurt anybody yet, and Antonio Brown, I think, is more on the fast track to Aaron Hernandez Town.
Well, what I'm saying is, yes, there's different levels of craziness in terms of both these athletes. But if you look at two polarizing athletes that are not team first players, that are not players that you want in the full, you know, guys that should be like the face of your franchise, can't do it. I mean, they're both in the same realm. Now, one of them has done something this way and one of them goes this way, but they're both going in the same direction. I mean, I wouldn't want Odell Beckham Jr. anywhere near my organization. And when the Giants traded him, I don't care if they gave him for free. I'm going to tell you, it was probably one of the best moves Gettleman made. And people get on Gettleman a lot. Odell Beckham Jr. is not a winner. And you can see it already. You saw the dynamic of what happened in Cleveland as soon as he got to Cleveland. That was an up-and-coming franchise, a team that was ready to roll, and what happened when Beckham got there? They're average. That's what it is.
If I'm a GM, the moment Odell Beckham wrote off his team this year, he becomes undesirable to me. So, that's it. Just want nothing to do with him. So we are running out of time, so that's hot or not.
All right, that's hot or not. We will be right back to tie a bow on this show. Don't go anywhere.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
When I was in Florida over the holidays, you know, this song, Brass Monkey, you know, this is the ending of our show. This song is our show. And there's, I went to a restaurant bar called the Brass Monkey in St. Pete Beach, which was like, the guy that owned it was a big Ravens fan. So the rugs were all Ravens logos.
Weird.
Everything was, yeah, what a great place though. Right on the ocean. It's actually in Pasig de Grill, which is like just, like it's right next to St. Pete. So you just keep going straight. Well, what doesn't matter, but what a fun place. Bought a t-shirt there. You know what I mean?
Were Brass Monkeys on the menu?
Oh yeah, there were Brass Monkeys on the menu. Yeah.
Did you get one? Two? Three?
Yeah, one, maybe. One, maybe two. Maybe two is a hot day. You know what I mean? Hey, Alex, thanks for coming in, man. Alex Abrami from the Free Press just stops in here today to hang out with us, with his Yankee sweatshirt on, which, you know, that's, I like that. You know what I mean? It's good to see you.
I kept my Giants gloves in the car.
Yeah, so are you happy? So before we let you out, I haven't seen it. Joe Judge, you happy with this? You like the move of the Giants?
I think this is the right move at the right at this time.
I totally agree. I'm so excited about the Giants.
I didn't know about Joe Judge a week ago or whatever it was, 10 days ago, but... Yeah. I like them. You can take away what you want from news conferences when they open. Be quiet.
I can just imagine as I get needled by this guy all these years with the Patriots.
I just bring up a couple of Super Bowls that he doesn't like to talk about. Yeah. And that's all I have to do.
Everybody loves Joe Judge. He hasn't lost you a game yet.
That's right. He has to be better than Pat Shurmur.
It has to be. Just you know the thing about this to me, Pat Shurmur, he's probably a great coordinator and he's probably a good coach, but I don't know how he get motivated listening to him talk. Like, he never motivated me. Listen, you ever hear like him talk to the team after? It's like, how you get men to get fired up when you're that? It's just not exciting.
He's like your high school history teacher.
Yeah. Seriously, that's what it was like.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. He's a good OC, but I do believe he had one other head coaching stint and it didn't go very well. I guess maybe we should have seen this coming.
Hey, the Green City Garage poll question today was, would you rather face a batter on steroids or a player that knew what pitch was coming? What do we got, bud?
100% of our listeners said they would rather face the juiced up batter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a no-brainer, right?
It says everything you need to know.
It really does.
If you're an MLB level hitter and you know what pitch is coming, you can do some damage.
That's the whole game. You're trying to guess what's coming next.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, how Altuve turned around, I still can't believe. I mean, did you watch Chapman's face? I don't know if you guys remember when the Yankees lost to Houston.
Yeah, a smirk Altuve, on his face.
I mean, he was in awe that he would square that up like that. I mean, in a fastball count, in a situation where he needs to get this guy out, he's not, you know, you can't be thinking slider. Now, it was a hanging slider, you give him that. But he squared up. It wasn't like Altuve got ahead of it and hit the, you know, and it's a bandbox down in Houston. He pounded that ball. So just crazy things going on in Major League Baseball. What's going on today, boys? We got basketball tonight. What's happening?
Yeah, I'm going to head to Petra Gym in about an hour or so to watch a UVM take on Hartford. Hartford 3-0 in the league. UVM is not the league leader at the moment.
I mean, UVM needs to win all these games. They got to win out. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of reasons. Number one, they want to get, you know, we want the one seed because we want to be able to do the show the Saturday before the game up there.
I mean,
I want to go up there. I want to get my credentials. I want to hang out up there again. Let's go, UVM. Enough of this garbage. You got to win today. You know what I mean? Austin, what are you doing today?
I'm going to catch some of that on probably on the interwebs and then tackle a couple projects. I got a lot of transcription to do, okay?
Yeah, and it's supposed to snow today, by the way, so be careful out there. You know what I mean? It's going to be a little slippery out there and it's really cold. Oh, you go. What's going on with you today, Aaron? Anything good this weekend?
I am talking with Brady about some show stuff after the show. And then after that, I'm going to go buy myself some new work clothes because I got a new job here.
Oh, congrats. Really?
Yeah.
What is it?
The administrative assistant. I think they announced it on the huddle.
That's right. Oh, congratulations.
They upgraded me to administrative assistant / production assistant.
Congratulations. Full timer. And that's exciting. Hey, listen, keep the station tuned right here because today coverage starts at the UVM Hartford game, where Alex will be right on the sideline. He'll be right there. Maybe if you go sign an autograph or something. You know, it's always good to get an Alex Abrami autograph. You know what I mean? That coverage starts there at 1:30. And then tomorrow you get all the NFL you need right here. Coverage starts at 2 o'clock, Tennessee at Kansas City. And then following that at 6:15, Green Bay at San Francisco. Guys, have a great weekend. Have a safe weekend. It's going to be really snowy, I think, from what I hear, maybe 2 to 6 inches. And for this winter, that's a lot of snow, right? I mean, for us, we haven't gotten a lot of snow.
We had like 6 inches the other day.
Was it 6 inches?
I had like five inches of snow on my car.
This winter's been so annoying. You know, it goes from being 55.
It was April last Saturday.
I know, and I loved every minute of it. I love the idea of snow until it comes. You know what I mean? That's my problem.
I don't mind the snow. It's the cold temperatures.
I know. Isn't this brutal? 1 degree, 2 degrees. Can't deal with that stuff.
In the wind.
The wind just kills you. You know what I mean? All right, this is Sports Saturday. We're here every single Saturday from 10 to noon. We're the other local show on this. Keep it right here the rest of the day. You got the Cats coming up pretty soon. Have a great weekend, everybody.